Hello and welcome along to yet another edition of the Outside the Box podcast. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the current Premier League champions Liverpool, as we're joined by URN legend and massive Liverpool fan, Jeremy Dunn. It's fair to say that it looked very positive a couple months ago for Liverpool. Yes, you were marred by injuries, but the game against Tottenham was seen as a top two clash. And despite injuries to Virgil van Dijk, Joe Gomez and Diogo Jota at that point, it seemed that Liverpool had what it took to compete for the title. You were victorious after a last-minute header from Bobby Firmino went in, and it put you as firm favourites to retain the title. However, since the win against Palace, the 7-0 win, and the 2-1 against Spurs, problems have become more apparent with further injuries and a drop in performances on the pitch. Jez, I'll turn to you for the first question. What do you think has gone wrong for Liverpool since then?
Oh, I always love when I get these questions first. I think that it's kind of been, for Liverpool, I felt that probably since about November time, there were cracks in this Liverpool team that people could see, that you could notice, but they were kind of being papered over by what had happened for Liverpool the previous season, which was the fact that in a way Liverpool were keeping low scores in defence, but they were able to get goals. They were in, you know, the old N plus one, you know, for how you will beat a team, you just get one more goal than them and you can just keep yourselves ahead of it. It was massively important for Liverpool in 1920, and it was up until basically 2021 that the way Liverpool was still hanging in there. They were still just about outscoring teams, but the attacking stats for Liverpool were sliding down and were dropping off. I would sort of look at this as kind of the crunch points of where actually kind of a few issues that were bubbling under the surface have all, unfortunately, collectively come to a point all at once. Liverpool for the last 2-3 years have actually been massively fortunate in terms of the expected goals against for them has not reflected the actual number of goals they have conceded, and their expected goals for has been, you know, much smaller than their actual output. Salah and Mane have been incredibly clinical up until this patch that we are currently in, and then all of a sudden it seems that Liverpool have fallen off a cliff in terms of their ability to score. And it's kind of, I suppose, things over the last 3 years evening out, but not evening out over 3 years' time. It's evening out all in 1 month, and it's making everything probably feel collectively worse. I think the way I describe it to a friend of mine when they were asking me about this, similar to you, as they were saying, what is it? I think it's basically been 3 years' worth of problems, not over that time span, just all in the space of pretty much half a season and really getting exacerbated. There is a plethora of reasons, I think, for why Liverpool have been bad for the whole season. The injury crisis, which I know we're going to get on to, but I also would say, I think we've seen quite clearly that of the teams in the top six, really the side that I feel, and this is not just as a fan, you know, lives off the support of their fans more than I think anyone I can think of in the top six is probably Liverpool, because the fan base for a long time has been so united. There hasn't been those sort of rifts or divisions which you could say have existed within the Man United fan base, Chelsea fan base, or even the Arsenal fan base. You know, the Man City fan base, do they really affect it? Well, no, funnily enough, playing in an empty stadium full of plastic seating is actually just as much a benefit for them as it was before. But I digress. I think that has been a bit of an impact for Liverpool, the fact that they haven't had that ability to, when things go, to draw on that energy from the crowd and really push them forward.
What about you, Alex? Do you second Jez's thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Jez has described it perfectly. You know, all the success, all the brilliance of the last, I mean, some people would say 2 years, some people would say 3 years, but I'd even argue that we were at a really high level from 16-17 onwards. A lot of people forget that we got in the top four, and we also we were second at Christmas time that season behind a very strong Chelsea side. So it's been 4 years of extreme intensity under Jurgen Klopp. Of course, the last 2 years being the highest points of success with the Champions League, the Premier League, the Super Cup. And then going into this season, you know, I think the expectations were obviously very, very high. We had a we had a Champions League, Premier League winning squad alongside three good signings, in my opinion. You know, Thiago Alcantara, who I've talked about a lot through Outside the Box. Diogo Jota, kind of the natural successor to a Sadio Mane. And Kostas Tsimikas, who gave us, you know, some defensive depth, a very good backup option to Andy Robertson. And yeah, things have just not clicked this season in the simplest way. And Jeremy obviously went into bigger detail about why. But I think the easiest way to describe it is that a game where in 1920 or even in 1819, where we accumulated 97 and 99 points respectively, a game that I always think back to sum up this point is a 1-0 win we had over Sheffield United in the 1920 season, where we weren't good at all. We didn't deserve to win, but just that little bit of quality, it was kind of a deflected shot from Genie Wijnaldum, I believe, got us the win. And basically those moments, those little flickers of brilliance from a Mane or a Salah or one of our midfielders, a good ball in from one of our fullbacks, a header from a set piece from a centre-back, these moments have been missing, and this is why we've been struggling so much. And I think Jez is absolutely right. We haven't had the fans there to kind of chivvy us along when times are difficult. You can, of course, blame the injury crisis. And I think, you know, we'll go into the injuries. We'll go into specific reasons why Liverpool are underperforming so much this season. But for me, I think the easiest way to sum it up is a combination of injuries mixed together with some very lackluster performances. And something I found really interesting this season is that both results against Spurs, which we'll go into more detail again, and the 7-0 against Crystal Palace, they're not just some of our best performances this season. For me, they've been some of the best performances I've ever seen as a Liverpool fan. They were so, so good. But we just haven't had that consistency that we've had over the last couple of years. And that's led to so many stumbles.
Yeah, I think all of these points are completely valid. It's definitely true that the lack of fans and the atmosphere that Liverpool players once thrived on is not there anymore. And also, it does sound like, from what you have said, that the high intensity of Jurgen Klopp's style of play is almost like it was waiting to happen. And I personally believe, if you look at the Manchester City side of the last couple of seasons, getting 100 points and 98 points the season after, and then to drop off and then get 81 points, I don't think it's unnormal for Liverpool to have dropped off. I mean, you've been competing at the highest point in the league with 99 and 97 points, as you mentioned there, but moving on, you did mention the signing of Thiago Alcantara, Alex, and I know you're a massive fan, and it's been a bit unfortunate given the amount of memes that have come up on the internet. And I personally, I'm a big fan. I was very excited for you when you signed him. But Jez, what have you made of Thiago's performances so far? He's obviously been marred by a few injuries, and he's had to do a lot of the work in the defensive midfield, given Fabinho's reverted to centre back. So I think it has been more difficult. Would you say that?
Absolutely, 100% agree with you on that. I mean, the problem is, like you said there, Benji, he's become the poster boy of this bad run of form, because unfortunately his return to the side has coincided with Liverpool's downturn. I mean, he arrived with a bit of an injury. He then got COVID after the first match against Chelsea. Then he came back. He got his knee kicked in by Richarlison, which I'm still staggered by, that Everton fans still argue that wasn't a red. And since then, he was obviously then working his way back into the side. And when he comes back into the team, he comes back to find that Liverpool's staple core, two core midfielders of Fabinho and Henderson, who, in my opinion, when Liverpool one day in a mythical time far off in the future will have a fully fit squad and field that fully fit squad, that midfield three for me is Thiago and Henderson as the eight, and then you have Fabinho behind. That is ideal for Thiago because he's got that defensive screening and he can be a bit more of a sort of free eight that he wants to be and drift around and ping those passes that we know he can. And you know, the problem is he comes in, those two aren't there, they're playing in defence, and so Klopp slots him in at six and then he moves him around to eight and he tries to work out where to play him. And the fundamental issue is, I think, for Liverpool was that because both of our number sixes were having to play, or guys who can very ably fill in at number six were having to play in defence, you lose that defensive ability in midfield. The rest of Liverpool's midfielders are really box-to-box, shuttling number eights, guys that run around a lot. And then, you know, Thiago has experience of playing this six, but he's more of a Pirlo of a six, I would say, than a Fabinho, if that makes sense. And he's obviously become scapegoated because Liverpool fans all through the summer, we were all crying out for saying it was Liverpool fans going on and on about how he wanted Thiago. And then he comes in. Some fans say, well, he doesn't do anything. He just sort of runs around. He's clumsy, doesn't do anything. Well, actually, no. He's led the team this year for tackles and interceptions over 90 minutes. He's number one in the charts. Jones is actually third and Fabinho is second. So it's an interesting top three for Liverpool's defensive stats. But Liverpool's midfield has always been where the team has started from. And I'm sorry, on a bit of a tangent with this, but in my opinion, he long-term Thiago will pay off and it will be seen as a reason why it works. And it was positive because the argument for the last 2 years beforehand was that Liverpool didn't have that player in the centre of the park that could unlock a defence, that could, if Liverpool were playing at Burnley, for example, Burnley sit deep block, compact the space, Trent and Robertson cannot whip the ball in and get the crosses working properly. What Liverpool needed was a central player who could unlock the defence, and Thiago is exactly that sort of a player. So I think he will work. I think it will come off. I think it's just unfortunate for him. He's come in as a at an inopportune moment, at a bit of a bad time, but he's got this season to settle in, get his feet under the table, and basically work out how he's going to fit in with the squad. I mean, a very weird analogy I came up with the other day, and I'm sorry, this is sort of somewhat of a digress into cricket, which is going to sound stupid considering England have just lost the Test match today. But a weird digress is that Liverpool kind of over the summer became obsessed with the idea of wanting this ball-playing midfielder, this guy that could give us that extra dimension, that extra change. And the thing I could give as an example, I was trying to explain something, I was saying it's how England cricket has become obsessed with this idea to have a left-arm fast bowler rather than the fact that every other English cricketer I can think of that bowls for England as a bowler is a right-armer. It's just that something different, that different ability to change a game but individually, which is what I think Thiago will give for Liverpool. I hope I'm not counting my chickens, but he didn't start off fantastically at Bayern. That is something which people have forgotten. You know, he comes in off the back of a treble-winning side, but he had his trials and tribulations at Bayern. It's just, I think it's a case, really, for a lot of Liverpool fans, even those that are getting chippy at him now, it's just that, look, this is the worst possible environment to try and judge him in.
No, I completely agree, and I do think that he needs to be cut a bit of slack because it's his first season in a league, and the amount of injuries that have happened to Liverpool this season have been totally unprecedented, and the amount of responsibility that's been left on his shoulders, it's almost harsh, and I think a lot of media outlets are overly critical of Thiago, and yeah, I do second your thoughts, Jez, because I do think Liverpool's investment will begin to pay off eventually next season, and I do think he offers something different in your midfield that wasn't there for the last two seasons. I mean, whether it needed to be there is a big question because in that time you won the Champions League and the Premier League, but I guess this is Klopp adapting his tactics. But Alex, I obviously was going to ask you the Thiago question. You wouldn't have forgiven me if I didn't. So what's your thoughts? Do you agree with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are elements of his performances that can be criticised, but we have to put it into context. He's a player with an injury record that can't be denied, and we were aware of that when we signed him, and that was why there was some kind of scepticism amongst FSG, because they were slightly reluctant to sign a 29-year-old who has had recurring problems. He came off, you know, possibly his best season ever, you could argue, playing alongside Joshua Kimmich in a Champions League, Bundesliga winning Bayern Munich side, and was one of their key players in the build-up as well. So, you know, had a very intense season. And I think he's come into Liverpool, as Jez said, and as you said earlier as well, he's coming off the back of an injury. He got COVID very, very quickly, and then he had the injuries following the first Merseyside derby. And I agree that our strongest midfield, I believe it's two things. It's one of two things, effectively, and I don't quite know which one it is, but I think the combination that Jez suggested of Fabinho at number six, Thiago at number eight, and Henderson as another number eight is a really strong midfield. I just think it would be such a kind of press-resistant, possession-focused, you know, technically excellent midfield. But the only question there is there someone in that midfield who could kind of offer a few goals? You know, Henderson's not a natural goal scorer. Fabinho will get a couple of seasons, but Thiago as well will probably get one or two. But is it potentially better? This is obviously disregarding any injuries whatsoever. But is it potentially better to play a Fabinho, a Thiago, and someone who can kind of make those runs into the box, like a Curtis Jones or a Naby Keita? But of course, with Naby Keita, I'm a huge fan of his, but he's had so many consistent injuries, it's difficult to judge him. And Curtis Jones, I think, has actually probably been one of our best players, and I think he's probably been thrown in more than he would have expected to be, but I've generally been really, really impressed with him. And I think we'll talk about the Chelsea game a little bit, but I was quite surprised that Jurgen Klopp brought him off so early, because I just thought he always looks like he can do something. And on Thiago, I think people are naturally going to judge him on goals and assists. And the easy thing to say is that that's not his game. It's kind of the build-up play. And a player that, obviously, Benji, you're very familiar with, that I like comparing Thiago to, is a Santi Cazorla type of Arsenal a few years ago, where the bigger emphasis was on starting attacks, you know, transitioning the ball, playing from deep. And as Jez said, the kind of Andrea Pirlo-style deep-lying playmaker. So I think it comes down to not being played in the right position. You know, he's featured too much at six this season. I also think he struggled with not having a defensive midfielder. He's gone from having Joshua Kimmich, who for me is the best defensive midfielder in the world, playing alongside him, to having Gini Wijnaldum playing there, who is not a defensive midfielder at all. And that's something Jurgen Klopp's trying to persist with. And I think really, with our injuries, the only way to solve it, and I don't know if you agree with this, Jess, but I think although Fabinho's done a brilliant job at centre-back at points this season, I think now it's time to kind of trust our younger players at centre-back and just bring him back into the defensive midfield. I think it will improve Thiago. I think we'll have more protection for our defence. And I just think it, at this point, is the healthiest thing to do. With Henderson out as well, we're crying out for that defensive midfielder. We're looking overrun in midfield without it. And I just think Thiago will probably be the biggest beneficiary of that.
That's Sorry, Jez.
No, I was going to say, I think Klopp kind of, before in his press conference before the Chelsea game, I think he hinted at the fact that he was wanting to move Fabinho pretty soon back into the centre of the midfield. And I think if Ozan Kabak, we're recording this before the Fulham match, Ozan Kabak is out for the Fulham game. Personally, I would have thought if Kabak was fit and Phillips was fit, I would just trust those two at the back and just put Fabinho ahead of them, because I think he helps sort two problems for the price of one by being in that position. Having him in defence is not really helping either. I think he's a fine centre-back. I think he's done very well there. But, you know, I think that Phillips, for me, has to start, because he's actually been the defender I've been most impressed with. I know he's also a great ball player, but for what I view it as, he's a defender first and foremost, and that's why I have favoured him a lot more over Reece Williams, who, you know, I think will have a great future, but he almost seems to shy out of a tackle, whilst Phillips is almost the guy that will think, well, to hell with it, I'm going to make sure you're not going to get this goal, I'm going to put my body in the line and do absolutely everything, and that endears him a lot more to the fans, which I think is why, you know, fans have started to come round to him more. But yeah, I completely agree with you there, Alex. I think Fabinho back in the centre defence, preferably as soon as possible. If Kabak is back for the next game after Fulham, which I think is Wolves, then I would happily do that and happily just trust a defence of those two.
Yeah, I think it's crucial to bring Fabinho back into the centre of midfield. I think easily he's been one of the two best defensive midfielders in the last year alongside Joshua Kimmich, and Liverpool are clearly missing him in midfield, and maybe with your like 20 defensive pairings this season you can add another one. But Yes, Jez, you're right to mention we're speaking after the time of the Chelsea match, and obviously this was Liverpool's fifth straight defeat at Anfield, which seemed impossible a couple months ago, I'd say, and it's happened. So, Jez, what did you make of your side's performance against Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea, who are obviously on the honeymoon bounce and aren't really conceding many goals, but it just looked very disappointing?
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic way to honour one of probably the club's greatest ever players in King Kenny Dalglish's 60th birthday, which was that day. Kenny was there, and you know, we honour him by setting a record for the most number of losses we've had at Anfield. It was appalling. I for obvious reasons, can't repeat several of the explicits that I know good friends of mine and co-hosts on podcasts sort of were describing that game as being, because I completely echo the sentiment. It was very one-sided. I can't remember if we even had a shot on target before at least the 70th minute. I don't believe we did. Chelsea were going into this, I thought that it was going to be a tight game. I didn't think it'd be high scoring. I thought that Tuchel's Chelsea are actually, I remember, Ben, that you and I a couple of weeks ago when I think we were on a call with a bunch of guys from uni, you and I were discussing what we thought was the most boring team to watch in the league. I think we found the winner, and I think it's Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea. I think they are just so dull in the amount of ball retention they try and do in recycling possession. I'd thought that before this Liverpool game, and you know, just the moment that Mount scored for Chelsea, I partly thought, well, that's it, we're not going to get through this lot. They are so defence heavily focused that it's just not going to happen. And well, you know, Salah obviously getting pulled off in the 60th minute went down very well with him, it's safe to say. Curtis Jones coming off early, I agree with Alex. I was surprised that I did feel that he has shown he is that kind of guy that it's almost a case of, look, give me the ball, I'll try and do something, like how Coutinho used to do for Liverpool. But I'm not obviously putting that much pressure on a 19-year-old who's only playing his first full season as a sort of regular in the team. The only thing with Curtis Jones I would say is that he does, unfortunately, I think that the Sheffield game was his one good game a month. He does have sort of one game a month where he does stand out, and then the rest of the time it's sort of, He tries, but he's a young guy. You can't expect him or put that much pressure on him. I mean, just in general, I thought it was very, very disappointing. It was clearly a front three that are a mixture of exhausted, low on confidence, and just, I think, completely physically spent. I think there was a real aspect to that. I think Jota coming back in will be a big boost to them, and probably a massive kick up the backside for both Salah and Mane, because I think if Jota comes in and starts hitting goals, well, I would not begrudge Klopp of dropping one of the pair personally. I think it was very, very demoralising for Liverpool fans, especially the fact, like you said, obviously, that the home record, I mean, just about 10 months ago when that fixture was played at Anfield, it was for Liverpool winning the league. Now it's for lifting the league title. Now it's setting an appalling club record. And I remember, I think again, 12 months ago when it was the second leg of the Champions League at Anfield, and Liverpool had gone unbeaten in Anfield, both in Europe and at home for, I think it was going on 4 years at that point or something, you know, ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. I was thinking, well, it's fine, it's Anfield, it's really, you know, it's our home. We might as well be playing on the moon for the way we've been playing so far this season at Anfield. It's just been appalling.
Jez, you mentioned Diogo Jota, and obviously he was a big signing for Liverpool in the summer, £40 million roughly, and no one expected him to start straight away and have the impact that he did have. I remember thinking this is a long-term replacement for Sadio Mane, but then at the start of the season he started benching Bobby Firmino. Eventually Klopp would incorporate all four of the front four at one point. I didn't know what the plans were, but it seemed very bright. I remember his hat-trick away to Atlanta, and he looked to be the signing of the season. He got injured. And he's returning. How important do you think this will be, Alex, in Liverpool's end to the season, that one of your star men is coming back?
I think it's important, but I think Liverpool fans can't get too carried away, because by every indication, I think Diogo Jota was unbelievable at the start of the season. And I remember when we signed him, I thought, as you said, like, he's definitely a signing for the future, but I imagine he'll kind of be our substitution option, a decent rotation option. And the fact he was, you know, justifying a place in our strongest 11 was such a brilliant indication. That game against Atalanta was amazing as well. I remember there was that delicate chip, there was that cut inside where he scored in the bottom left-hand corner. He looked so hungry, and he just, whenever he got the ball, his primary objective was just to drive towards goal and cause problems. So that was really, really exciting. But I think we need to be careful and think, you know, he's not going to be the player that's potentially going to transform our season now. I mean, he might. He's certainly going to help, but we have only signed him. He's coming back from an injury. He's still very young, and there's a lot of potential there. So I think we have to be slightly careful in terms of, you know, making sure our expectations of him are relatively grounded. But I think the indications are definitely there that he's going to be a really, really important player. But on the point about the front three, I mean, they do look exhausted. It is, as Jez put it perfectly, that it's a combination of exhaustion, low confidence and poor form. You know, they're three extremely capable players. And I think Jota coming back will help with, hopefully, you know, pushing them to better standards. As we've sort of seen at Man United, with sort of Alex Tears' arrival, it's pushed Luke Shaw. I mean, that's a really weird example, but, you know, when a good player's there to kind of rival your position in the team, it can have a very positive effect on your form. But someone I want to mention a bit, and someone who has sort of come to the attention of James Pearce, who very rarely comments on kind of player form and is very rarely critical of our players, is Bobby Firmino. And I remember I read this James Pearce tweet, and James Pearce was basically saying that Bobby Firmino, he's been an Anfield legend, but his powers have dwindled. He's not only not clinical enough in front of goal, and I agree with this 100%, by the way, but he's not only not clinical enough in front of goal, but the influence he has in starting attacks, in pressing, in getting the best out of our wingers is dwindling as well. And I was just, in the Chelsea game, I found him so ineffective. And it's horrible to say, because I really don't like going in on our players. I really don't like being overly critical. But I've just found Firmino really, really frustrating this season. And I know he's trying hard. It's just like something's not there this season that's been there for the past 3-4 years. And I think when Jota comes in, and he basically needs to come in for Firmino now. And I think we need to start looking at kind of long-term Bobby Firmino replacements. He's 30 this year. I think there has been a significant drop-off in form, a significant enough one to kind of justify a change. I mean, we've been linked with Jonathan David from Lille, who I think would be a good signing, but only 21. So, of course, there's a little bit of a risk attached to that. But I think, you know, Lautaro Martinez is one of the few kind of elite centre-forward false nine players in Europe. So that would be the kind of option I'd be pretty interested in as well. But I love Bobby Firmino. I've seen him produce some extraordinary things, but the last couple of months, I've just found him really, really frustrating to watch. And I feel really horrible saying it, but it's been difficult, yeah.
Well, Alex, you took the words out of my mouth. I was just about to mention Bobby Firmino and the James Pearce article. It is very interesting that he's critical of the player, and he's suggesting that a replacement needs to be purchased in the summer for Klopp to move on with this project. But Jez, what have you made of Bobby Firmino this season? It is clear that there has been a drop off, and obviously he has been starting week in, week out, and I think he was consistently in the squad for the last 4 or 5 years. So I think it is only natural, but at the same time, him turning 30, maybe it's time for Liverpool to move on.
I think it probably sadly is. I mean, he is the player that's not just whilst he's been at Liverpool, but who Klopp throughout his entire managerial reign has played the most in games. He has the highest number of caps of any player under Jurgen Klopp, which I found absolutely astonishing. But this is a real test now for Klopp. It's, can he, you know, Firmino is a guy who is clearly absolutely fanatically loyal to him and will get, and, you know, would, I think, run through a brick wall. And I think that is something which he he clearly does. I don't think Firmino is fully fit at the moment. I think he is actually either physically fatigued or he is just sort of mentally shot to pieces from the fact he's had to play so much, in that he isn't, you know, he isn't even, I'd say, at 80%, you know, full match fitness, or, you know, as you'd have on FIFA, match sharpness, or, you know, that he's ready for it. But I think because he is so, you know, wants to be Klopp there for the manager and for the club, he's basically sort of, you know, through gritted teeth, you know, smiling and saying, yes, I'm fine, I can play, you know, pick me, I can do it. And Klopp is returning that by throwing him out there. It certainly doesn't help the case of thinking, should we rotate him, when your only option at the moment, for until obviously Joshua's returned, was Steve Okorigi, who, you know, bless him, I will always love him for what he did in 2019. But unfortunately, we aren't in 2019 anymore, Rigi.
So will I. I'd always love him for that.
It doesn't help when he is your go-to backup option, I think, for Klopp. I think there's a lot of talk that Liverpool are either at the point or are about to miss the point where they need to sell at least one of the front three, and Firmino is being presented as the option for it. I personally would say that I don't think that is going to happen. At least I don't think Firmino will be sold. I could see, of all the front three to leave, I think it will be Mane, just because I think he has the sort of skill set that is most easy to replace, and like we said, Jota is there, so he is a sort of guy who could come straight in. But I think for Firmino, the immediate priority needs to be getting an understudy to him in straight away, a guy that can directly compete with him. Yes, that could be Jota for the moment, but if that's the case, then Liverpool kind of go back to square one. And Jota isn't even the first player we've thought could be Firmino's understudy and replacement. You know, Takumi Minamino was initially brought in, there was a lot of expectation that he might be that player, and he's since, well, we don't know. He's either not clicked, or he's actually shown to Klopp that he's better played out on the left-hand side. You know, whilst he's been at Southampton, that's where he's shone. But this is really, I think, for Michael Edwards, this will be, I mean, there's all the sort of talk about how well he's done recruitment. This, I think, is now one of the big tests. He's got to get this player right. If Klopp is going to play Jota there as the Firmino replacement, and fine, we need to find it. We go back to looking for a Mane replacement. If Jota is the Mane replacement, then okay, you have to now, you know, definitively get this replacement right for Firmino. So it's a big ask for Liverpool in the transfer market. I'd love Lautaro Martinez, I really would, but I just don't think that we'll be able to quite pull him in for it. I think it might be someone, maybe a Jonathan David, maybe someone like, I don't know, like Marcus Thuram, for example, at Gladbach, I think could be an option. I think with Marco Rosa leaving Gladbach, that might be where Liverpool look, possibly. I've heard Rafinha linked a lot, which I would love, but I don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, moving away from that, I think the recruitment for Liverpool has always been good. It's always been something that's been praised. I did feel this summer, I said to a few friends, that Liverpool felt like they had done three quarters of the required business. I thought that Tsimikas coming in was fine for cover. Jota was a good signing. Thiago, obviously, we've talked about. And then I said at the time, we hadn't replaced Lovren. And, well, we know that Liverpool obviously then went and sold that later. But, going back to the point, I think it's another one where it feels like Liverpool's recruitment has got to be spot on to get this, because I think with Liverpool facing the very real possibility of finishing outside the Champions League this year, there won't be as much cash to play with, and so it will only probably, you can't sort of think we might go for two or three guys or two options, maybe three, that could fit this role or could play in a number of positions. It's got to be every player they go for has got to really be a hit, both landing as a hit as a backup to give Firmino maybe time to rest, or if Firmino is sold for a decent amount and Liverpool reinvests that in a player, again, that is probably even more precious. So I don't know. I think Firmino's time as Liverpool's most frequent starter in the team is definitely going to be up by the end of this season. It's just a question of, will he still be at the club come the start of the 2022-23 season that is the crunch point?
It's certainly a big summer ahead for Liverpool. But now we touched on this earlier in the podcast, and we mentioned the injuries to Virgil van Dijk, Joe Gomez. And in January, Liverpool completed the signing of Ozan Kabak on loan from Schalke with an option to make it permanent to sign him for £18 million at the end of the season. And Liverpool also completed the signing of Ben Davis, I think, for £4 million. But yeah, it has been a mess defensively this season, with Fabinho having to revert back to that position. But it does seem like there is long-term planning from Michael Edwards. And Alex, how do you see that panning out? Do you think when Virgil van Dijk returns, obviously we don't know the circumstances in which he'll return, because players who come back with ACLs famously have a lot of niggling injuries afterwards. But do you think the long-term plan would be Ozan Kabak and van Dijk?
I think that's true. I think, obviously we don't know. We don't know with what will be, what kind of Virgil van Dijk will play like when he's back. And we don't know what Joe Gomez or Joel Matip will be like either, because, of course, they've succumbed to long-term injuries. And the concern with them, the reason why I think you could argue van Dijk will be the least effective of the three, obviously we don't know, but that was van Dijk's first major injury. It was a freak incident. Van Dijk's statistics in terms of playing, he was basically in the side essentially consistently since 2018. I think he started every Premier League game. There was some insane statistic about that. The problem with Joe Gomez, and particularly Joel Matip, is that they've had long-term injuries before. With Matip, it's kind of another 3-4 month injury. But Joe Gomez, you could argue it's as bad as that injury that he had in 2017, which basically kept him out for the whole of the 17-18 season. So in a way, I'm more worried about them, because I love both of them. I'm happy when Van Dijk and Gomez play together. I'm happy when Van Dijk and Matip play together. And I was of the opinion that when Van Dijk went out, I was like, I actually think we'll be fine. I think we can still definitely win the league with a centre-back combination of Gomez, Matip and Fabinho. Like, I genuinely thought that was good enough. Even when Gomez was out, I thought if we could keep Fabinho and Matip together until the end of the season with Henderson at DM, I thought it was good enough, because I think Matip and Gomez are really, really underrated players. I think we should sign Kabak regardless of how well he does. I think £18 million is a steal for a player who's played really well in the Bundesliga. He was obviously shining in a Schalke side that was disastrously bad, and was personally recommended to Jurgen Klopp by David Wagner, of course, his good friend and former manager of Schalke. So I think we should sign Kabak regardless, typically because we haven't replaced Lovren. And I think we need kind of players like Rhys Williams and Billy Comacio and Seth Vandenberg to go out. I mean, Vandenberg's out on loan at the moment anyway, but I think Williams and Comacio definitely need to go out on loan. Realistically, Ben Davis was kind of signed as an emergency. I don't see him sticking around at the club for too long, because realistically, when we have better defenders back, he's going to be kind of fifth or sixth choice in the pecking order. And as much as I'd like Nat Phillips to stay, and I think he's had a brilliant season, I don't think Jurgen Klopp kind of sees him as the long-term Jurgen Klopp ball-playing centre-back. Of course, I've jokingly called him a Burnley centre-back, because he plays with that very kind of physical style, very good in the air. But as Jez said, that's why we've loved him this season as Liverpool fans. But in terms of departures, I just want to make a slightly broader point. Something I think we're not discussing enough, not just on this podcast, but just generally, is how is a manager like Jurgen Klopp going to emotionally deal, and how are the other players going to emotionally deal with some of these players leaving? I know it's something that hasn't really been discussed, but I remember when Dejan Lovren left at the end of last season, and I just remember the kind of huge emotional impact it had on players, particularly because Mo Salah, Klopp was known to be upset, as were many other players, and they said, you know, they were really going to miss him and stuff. And I just think because of the very close nature of the Liverpool squad, if that's how upset we were when Dejan Lovren left, how upset are we going to be when Gini Wijnaldum is probably going to leave at the end of the season, when Bobby Firmino is going to leave? How's that going to affect squad cohesion? Because Wijnaldum and Firmino, they are the perfect Jurgen Klopp players. The way they play, their commitment, their fitness, their pressing, their drive. And I don't know, it's a weird point, but I don't think kind of it's been discussed enough, because I think Wijnaldum leaving, he is, you know, you could argue he is possibly the player most loyal to Jurgen Klopp. They're known to be extremely close as well. And I think potentially him leaving and one of the front three in the summer, I think it's kind of an impact. That it's something that needs to happen ultimately, but there is going to be an impact on the squad.
Yes, undoubtedly. That it's weird to be talking about all these title winners and how they might be moving on and what would be the will be the next phase for Jurgen Klopp's project until his contract expires in 2024. A player we haven't mentioned who's been under fierce criticism at points this season for his defensive performances has been Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's fair to say he was probably one of the best right backs in the league, the best actually, last season with his exceptional assist record. But there's been times this season where he's been caught out of position. I remember when we were watching the Chelsea game the other night, Alex, that he was he just wasn't in his position, and then the ball was slotted on.
I was not very happy.
the ball was slotted onto Chelsea's left wing, and Liverpool looked in trouble. Didn't end up conceding, but the point is, it's not the first time it's happened. So, Jez, would you like to see Trent be moved into midfield eventually? Could he be an option there, or would you persist with him at right back in the long term?
I'd say probably ultimately Trent's future will lie eventually in midfield. I think that is, you know, it's something which almost feels like a predestined path for him, that everyone's been kind of saying, well, he's going to become a midfielder. You know, he started off as a midfielder, moved to fullback to break into the side, and will become a midfielder. I think he probably will at some stage. I could even see, and this is really crystal ball gazing, looking this far down the line, I could see, you know, how, winding this back to when we were talking about Thiago, you know, as that ball-playing midfielder at Liverpool, how I could almost see that when Thiago, you know, if Thiago leaves in 4 or 5 seasons' time, you know, by that point he'll be in his mid-30s, he might well move back to Spain or whatever, that, you know, a 25-year-old Trent Alexander-Arnold, probably coming into, you know, really in his prime, both physically and technically, plays in midfield and could run the show for Liverpool and have all the two-way actions. That might be when it happens. I don't think it will be an immediate thing for Liverpool. I was about to say, actually, I could see it much more easily in England. I could see that the England setup might try and squeeze him in there and before Liverpool do, personally. I think the more pressing thing for dealing with, for sorting out the Trent issue is, I mean, we've talked about summer targets for Liverpool. I had written down that I felt some sort of right back to actually properly, not compete with Trent, because I think Trent is Liverpool's first choice, but to at least, like we said with Firmino, give him a rest, let him have a few games on the sideline, just take him out the firing line, you know, of all the critics banging on about him. And if necessary, you know, give him time at the new Kirkby Training Centre to say, right, just, you know, practice your one-on-one defending, practice doing this, doing that, you know, areas that he can just sort of spend time out of the direct spotlight, just focusing on. And I would say actually that some sort of confident, you know, 7 out of 10 performing right back who can slot in for him would be someone I would target for this window. I think if you put Nico Williams there, you're basically, you know, you're going around the circle because it's another young kid. We saw at the start of the season when Nico was sort of having to cover for Trent when Trent was injured. The amount of, really, in my view, out of order stick he was getting from pundits, you know, from fans. They were really going in on this poor lad. I mean, he was up against Aubameyang, for example, in that time. And, you know, Aubameyang, yes, he wasn't in as fine a form as we know he has been in his career. But Aubameyang is Aubameyang. He's an absolutely blisteringly fast forward. And you're asking a young 19-year-old Welsh right-back who has more caps for Wales than he does for Liverpool to cover this guy that is one of the most feared, you know, forward or wide wingers or also wide forwards in both, well, in the league. And you're saying, yeah, mark him out the game. And it's sort of just, oh, for God's sake, you know, you're setting him up to die. So I thought that was appalling when that happened. And, you know, I had a few very heated exchanges with several Liverpool friends of mine who were sort of roasting him at that point. I said, no, just, he shouldn't even be in that situation. Liverpool should have kept Nathaniel Clyne or someone along those lines if we were going to do something like that. But anyway, I digress. My solution for it would be find someone that can basically function in a Klopp system as a sort of cover for right back. Someone that knows they aren't going to displace Trent. But if Trent isn't performing, they can come in and cover for him for a few games. And it might also, like Alex said, it might be the Alex Telles effect. It might be Trent saying, right, this guy's come in. He is clearly a defending right back. I've got to up my game defensively. I've got to work on this, rather than spending, which we've heard from things where, for example, Andy Robertson jokes about him when he speaks to the media. Trent goes out in training for Liverpool. What's he do? Does he practice doing one-on-one defensive drills? Does he? Hell, he goes and starts practicing his free kicks. Fine, but you're a defender. Remember the basics. Anyway, that would be my view with the Trent thing. It's for a guy that has had so much football at such a young age. It's inevitable that he is going to have a bit of a drop off in form. He's been the golden boy for Liverpool. Everything he's touched has really turned to gold, and this is his first bad run of form. And he said it himself. He has never had a run of form like this. He doesn't know. He's 21, I think. He hasn't had the life experience to think, God, what do I do now? How do I get myself out of this? And you start panicking. And doing that, at any time for any football club is bad, let alone when it's Liverpool. And there is so much scrutiny and you are a local player. It's horrible for him. But I think, my view on it would be someone's come in and just sort of give him a bit of a breather when he needs to be. Just very quickly, going back to what Alex was talking about with the squad rotation, with the transfers for the squad departure this year, I completely agree with you on Genie. I think him leaving will be massive for the team. Wijnaldum apparently tapped Klopp up whilst he was at Newcastle. He was so keen to play under Klopp, he basically said to Klopp, sign me, I want to play for you. So it's then a bit weird that he's then jumping ship to Barcelona, but I sort of understand because of the fact that he keeps thinking it's his boyhood dream to play for Barcelona. So, swings and roundabouts with that. There are players,
just
I think.
Quickly, it's the five. I think it's because he wants the 5-year deal as well.
Yeah.
obviously, Barcelona, the kingpins of transfer business, are offering a 30-year-old Genie Wijnaldum a 5-year contract.
Yeah, I think that's Barcelona.
But
I think it certainly is the case. But one of the other transfers, for example, I could see Liverpool doing. I mean, I love Matip, same as you there, Alex, but I think Liverpool might genuinely look to move him on because for my mind, I will just say that the Champions League final will be the last time I will view Matip as sort of, that's the fond memory I want of him. I'm not sure afterwards when he's sort of been, held together by super glue, it's not really worked. But, another player that I would look at getting rid of, really, from a Liverpool standpoint, is Oxlade-Chamberlain. I don't think he provides that impact. I know, obviously, Ben, it's the Arsenal connection. You do like him, but I don't think he provides any impetus for Liverpool off the bench. I think he's been injured for a long time, so fair enough to him for that. He's been coming back with a lot of injuries, and the club has been there supporting him. But it's kind of like the Danny Ings situation repeating itself. Mm. It's a guy that the club has supported for so long, and then when he comes back, it's all like, right, can you now return all that favour by doing something for us? And he just doesn't seem to look like he can be bothered. Great, right, well, thanks for all that time, Alex. Get back on the bench and put your coat back on. He's on, considering the amount of wages he's on, which I think is another factor that Liverpool are going to really have to look at. They're going to be looking, I think, at their highest earning players and working out which of those they can sell on. He sticks out on that graph like a sore thumb in terms of minutes played, how much he earns, and what his direct contribution is, and could Liverpool have a better player? He would certainly, in my view, and I know an awful lot of Liverpool fans have been calling for his head recently since, I think it was I think it was the Brighton game he came on for, and he just wandered around for about half an hour and didn't look.
Mm. He kept getting tackled and dispossessed. I couldn't remember if it was Burnley and Brighton, and I do agree, actually, funnily enough, because Curtis Jones this season, I think he's been exceptional. Obviously, there's been points where he's received some criticism, but I think, for example, against Sheffield United the other night, he was phenomenal. And I think Liverpool need to start putting faith in him and move on from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. It is sad it hasn't really worked out because he was exceptional in 17-18, part of the blistering Champions League run. And then to suffer the injury he did against Roma, I think it's just been unlucky, and his impact is certainly dwindling. But yeah, in terms of Liverpool this season, clubs around Liverpool, funnily enough, are dropping points. Leicester have just lost Harvey Barnes, and they're the second most injury marred team in the league. And it does look like that with Brendan Rodgers as your manager, there's always a chance you could bottle it. But what would you say are Liverpool's hopes for a top four finish this season, Alex? Do you think could you see it happening, or do you think your best hopes of getting into the Champions League of winning it?
I can see it happening, but I do think the simple answer to it is that I do see us. I think we can finish in the top four. We're not as far off as I think we think we are at the moment, and I think particularly with Leicester dropping off, with United dropping off, Chelsea and Everton playing each other this weekend, and if it's very much centred around beating Fulham, which is why I think this weekend is a huge game for us, a huge week for us. I think if we beat them, it puts us a lot closer. And I just think teams around us are going to start dropping points. United have City. They've been stumbling a lot recently, struggling in front of goal. Rashford, Fernandes haven't had the same kind of impact as they did at the start of the season. I talk about Harvey Barnes loads, but I do genuinely think Leicester are now going to start falling away. I think he's played every game for them this season. I know they've adapted really well. Got to give them credit for not having Soyuncu in there, not having Johnny Evans. You know, a lot of the young players have come in, but they don't really have an effective out-and-out left winger. And it could be summed out by the fact that, you know, they're on the right wing, they've rotated between Dennis Pratt, Mark Albrighton, Unders come in for points, but they just haven't rotated the left wing because they can't afford to. And Barnes' output in terms of goals and assists is unbelievable. So I do think they're going to drop off. And I think that potentially gives us an opening. I think Tuchel's Chelsea are very much on course to win. To get into the top four. I think you can never underestimate Carlo Ancelotti and Everton, but there are still clearly inconsistencies in that side. So I think Everton definitely have a really strong chance, but I don't know if, you know, they're necessarily going to finish in the top four. I just think they might get held back at a couple of points. And West Ham, it's easy to think they'll fall away. They've been very, very good. But I think at the end, you know, they're quite reliant on their first 11, potentially like a Declan Rice injury, Thomas Suchek injury, I think could derail them. But I've gone away from Liverpool because we're about to record a podcast on the top four. So we'll go into a lot more detail on that with Cameron. But what I will say about us is, you know, 11 games left of the season. Of course, the Champions League does have to be in the front of our mind. It has to be the focus. I think, you know, if we get a pretty favourable quarterfinal draw, we're on track to beat RB Leipzig. But of course, we've got to take the second leg seriously. We can't write them off completely. But, you know, I think we stand a decent chance. I will admit, if we face Hansi Flick's Bayern Munich or Guardiola City, of course, I'm going to be very, very scared. But, you know, I think we stand a chance, definitely. But, you know, I think getting to the quarterfinal, the semi-final, and even going out at that point would be a really good achievement, given the difficulties we've had this season. And beyond that would be absolutely incredible. But I just want to bring up a quick point about kind of players leaving. I'm of the opinion that Oxlade-Chamberlain needs to go. As Jez said, he's so frustrating to watch sometimes. I know it's not his fault. I know he's been really marred by injuries. I love him off the pitch. He's clearly a great guy. But there was a situation against Brighton where I think it was one where he came on, and it was the last couple of seconds of the game. Trent takes a corner short and Oxlade-Chamberlain put the ball in, and it was just this terrible ball. And that kind of summed it up really well for me. That he's just not as effective as he used to be. And then the difference between him and, say, Naby Keita, although Keita's marred by injuries, when he does come in, he is actually pretty effective. His stats aren't amazing in terms of goals and assists, but in terms of key passes, in terms of contributions, he does really, really well. And that's the difference for me. That's why I still want to keep Naby Keita around, even though, like, Naby Keita's injury record is really, really poor. But, you know, going forward, I think we need to play Fabinho at DM. I think Thiago needs to maybe have a little bit of a rest, but I want him, you know, in the side as much as possible. And I think kind of we need a Jones or a Keita if they're fit. I think that's kind of a midfield that complements each other and should hopefully kind of stimulate the front three a bit more in terms of creativity. But yeah, they're basically my final thoughts, really. Can we get in the top four? I think we can. But it's going to be difficult, and I actually think there's a lot of emphasis on this game against Fulham.
Okay, so I'll quickly ask my last questions, but what about you, Jez? What do you make of Liverpool's top four chances? Do you see it happening?
I'm very similar to Alex. I think it's slim. I view it as. I completely agree with Leicester. I think the Harvey Barnes and James Maddison losses back to back really have affected them. I was really surprised at the lineup they put out against Burnley. It was so defensive. I thought the only way I think they've got any now attacking creative width is really by playing Castagna as a left wing back and probably now Ricardo Pereira as a right wing back. That would be my solution for it. But it's. I can see Leicester sliding off. I think, exactly like Alex said, Tuchel's Chelsea are nailed onto the top four, and obviously City, you know, will win the league. I think everyone's of their opinion. So realistically, and United, I think, will also probably hang on. So I think that leaves one spot left for, you know, Liverpool, Leicester, and Everton, I think, will be the teams competing there. I think West Ham have a really tough fixture run coming up now, actually, when you look at it. They're playing a lot of the traditional big six teams in back-to-back succession. If they come through that, their final run in, their last four games are pretty easy, it has to be said. So if West Ham are still, you know, between fifth, you know, sixth, fourth, fifth and sixth, if they are still in that bracket by the run in, then I think they will have a they have an outside shot. Everton have a very nice, easy run of games. That is the one thing that worries me. The best thing I would say is that their final game of the season is against Man City. And, you know, that could go any which way for how we know. It could be they are dependent on those points and we don't know how that will finish the season. I think there is a chance, but it is an increasingly dwindling prospect as to how that goes. I completely agree with Alex. I think this Fulham match is massive. Especially if Liverpool can just get this Anfield hoodoo off their back and just, you know, say, right, we can win at home. We've remembered how to win at home. That's done. Get on with, you know, finishing off the rest of the season. There is a really good chance. The Champions League, I think, actually might become incredibly important for financial reasons for the club. If we can get to the semi-finals, if we get a favourable draw in the quarter-finals and get to the semis, that might cushion some of the blow of not being in the top four come the end of the season. But I mean, if we get to the quarterfinals and we see Manchester City waiting there for us, I would just almost... I'm not really a defeatist individual when it comes to challenges like that. So I'm someone that says basically, you know, of the view that you've got to dig in, you've got to give what you can. But just the way that City have been playing, it's almost a case of, you know, I partly think that Liverpool team will almost roll their eyes and just think, oh, God, here we go again. So
no inspiration from the 17-18 season? In which Man City were also playing.
We had the fans for that. That would be the comeback I'd throw with that.
And we also had Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah, that helped. And non-form Oxlade Chamberlain, which also helped. But I think, basically, between now and... I think there's an international break in a couple of weeks, so the back end of that. And then I would say... I'm going off by game week, sorry, so I can't give you an exact date. I think probably... If Liverpool's still in there with the final five games of the season to go, if we have closed the gap on fourth to, I don't know, 4 points, 3 points maybe, then I think there's definitely a good shout. But I think it's got to be a case now Liverpool capitalising on, like Alex said, a lot of our rivals in that position playing each other. It worked in the Sheffield weekend when we had a fair few of the teams that were playing against each other. We closed the gap, but then against Chelsea in a must-win game, we shot ourselves fully in the foot. So, work to be done. But this very well could be a write-off season for Liverpool, I have a horrible feeling of saying.
So, very quickly, guys, what are your predictions for the Liverpool-Fulham match this Sunday?
I've gone for a little bit of I think it's going to be a really tight game. I remember playing Fulham in the draw. I'm being really impressed by the way they're playing. I have been pretty impressed by Scott Parker's Fulham the whole season. They've just really struggled being clinical, but you know their build-up play is really good. They're probably one of the better sides in the Premier League to watch. To be honest, they transition the ball really well. I love players like Lookman, Loftus-Cheek. Like they are really good players, but they do lack end product. We certainly can't write them off. I'm going for a 1-0 Liverpool win, but I do think it's going to be an extremely nervous 90 minutes, and it could be, you know, a sort of Mo Salah penalty that settles it or something. But I think it's going to be quite a tight game.
Why are you, Jazz?
Very similar. I think it's going to be a very tight game. Fulham, I think, since the fifth week of the season, have really improved. They've become a lot better in a lot of angle and a lot of aspects. And yeah, I think it will be very tight and very cagey. I would say I'm going for a 2-1. I can see it very much being a case of almost Liverpool will go behind and they sort of have to claw their way back into it. And I think actually at the heart of that could be Jota. I think that might be a big part of that. Yeah, I'd say a narrow and a very tight Liverpool win. But I haven't got a huge amount of confidence. I could very easily see this being a draw.
I'm going to go for 2-0 to Liverpool. So that brings an end to the first in-depth club podcast of the new year. Please follow Outside the Box for more exciting podcasts. We'll be releasing a top four one very soon as well. Thanks so much to Jez for coming on and Alex for sharing your thoughts on Liverpool. This has been Outside the Box.